go. Knowing where you are, we got Tom in here for a pinpoint forecast there in Greenwood. Tommy, get in here. Tommy, get in. Tommy, get in here. No, the other door. Other door. Tommy, the other door. That's better.
First flakes in Greenwood. Oh, no, first flakes.
All right. First flakes. How do they look like? Are they each one is unique and unto itself?
You bet. And there are a lot of them.
Okay.
They're like blowing in the wind. It's like it's almost like, snow.
Woo! I'm diving in. All righty.
First flakes. That was going to be the name of our show originally, I think.
Yes, it was. It was the working title. I sent Jacob a weather forecast. Did you put it? Do you have it, Jacob?
No. How? In what context did you send
a weather form forecast? Of a video? I sent you a video from my outhouse. Right. Wearing my daily constitution.
Yeah, sorry, I'd forgotten. You start with a.
Oh no! Whoa! Hold on a second. Wait, good show. I hate to stop the music for 1 second here, but hold on. You forgot.
Well, I will say, John, you send me a lot of videos sometimes. So
yes, you know what? Because I got word from management. You need more social media stuff. Well, I'm not going to write anything because Tom makes fun of my spelling. So here, you know what? I'm sitting there in the outhouse. Bang! Here's a video for you. Look at that. There you go. There's some content, huh?
Right. It starts off with
produced in the outhouse.
Right.
That content's produced.
It begins with a shot of your boots and even your open zipper. It's amazing that it's still a clean, family friendly video somehow.
Barn in here. Let a climatologist to scare the hell out of you. Here he comes. Bond, who was the man that termed the blob, and he has toured big cities like Sitka and Sitka, talking all about the blob, which is a giant mass out there just waiting. It can't be stopped. It's out there in the Pacific, and it's a big thing of warm water, and that's where he's made a name for himself. Have you done a TED Talk X with that thing yet, Nick Bond?
Yeah, you know, a lost opportunity, I guess.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, listen, we had you
so
on.
So like your appearance here.
Listen, we had you on. We wanted to get you on. But Jacob's like, let's get Nick Bond on because, you know, he'll give you the straight poop on this whole thing as to where we are with the amount of snow. When you sit there and you watch these guys go on and on about it or news talk about it, are you like, oh, my God, people are panicking and it's not that big of a deal? Are you going to be like Tom yesterday and throw a wet blanket on it?
Well, no. I think it is going to be a pretty big deal, and especially Friday night into Saturday. And so this is just kind of a tune-up.
Oh, a tune-up.
Yeah. But I should say, you know, ever since it started snowing, all my mother does is stare at the window. And at some point, I guess I should let her inside.
Hey, by the way, Sean, get the rim shot ready for Nick Bond. I just say that you and Tom have a lot in common. That I've never met and never read a scientist who so often puts in, starts out with just a general feeling of, I remember the good old days and how you long for the snow and the cold of Seattle and this and that of Seattle. So you and Tom have a lot of that in common where... Yeah, you like the big old snowy days, and I think it was, 2019, we had an unusually high February, a bunch of snow there. I think in last year, or just the average amount of snowfall is about 7 inches. But so as a scientist, do you look back sort of melancholy for the way things were,
nostalgically,
say, 20 or 30 years ago? Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, and, you know, the temperatures are warming around here, and so we should celebrate when we get this kind of weather because, we got more of it in the past. That being said, you know, we are in for a snowy few days here. And so, but getting back to February 2019, don't think it's going to be anything like that. That was 20 inches of snow at SeaTac, third or fourth snowiest month in all time. And it was all 15 inches of that snow fell in 4 days. So we're unlikely to have anything quite like that.
Okay, let's go sort of day by day. Today, it sounds like Seattle is at best going to get a light dusting. But south of Seattle, say South King County and Pierce County especially, and down near Olympia, they're going to get hit relatively hard today as well as tomorrow and Saturday, no?
Yeah, that's right. It's right now snowing quite a bit harder down in the Olympia area. And so, yeah, this is just kind of a warm-up. That's a bad term to use about a snowstorm, I suppose. But, yeah, and even for the storm coming in on Friday, later in the day probably, into Saturday, it's probably the South Sound, Kitsap and Mason County, south into Hood Canal that's really going to get hammered.
Okay. By hammered, by those standards, is that like 10 to 12 inches or 6 to 8 inches?
Yeah, well, yeah, now you're putting me on the spot. And
of course, that's why we have you on.
You know, well, sure, but, you know, it's there's a lot of factors that go into it, and, you know, a little, we can never and never will be able to predict these sort of things exactly.
Okay.
But, yeah, it could be as much as, you know, 10 inches or a foot in spots. I think that's kind of on the high end. And okay. In the Seattle area, you know, roughly half that or something is our, you know, there's some of the computer model forecasts are less, some are more. And so we just have to kind of deal with that uncertainty.
And then how about, like, the Snohomish County? We kind of touched on King and Pierce. Snohomish County and Kitsap County, what are their expectations? Because we have listeners there, too.
Yeah, Kitsap should get plenty. And there, because the winds are from the east, there's a little bit of kind of drying off the Cascades for King County and Snohomish County. But as you go to the other side of the sound, it's more favorable for heavier snow there. But okay. As you go north, probably less. And I have to put in that qualifier because, again, you know, this we can't just specify it exactly. And then, you know, for what it's worth, there's storm number three coming in on Sunday that is certainly going to start off as snow. Right now, it looks like it'll turn to rain sometime, you know, maybe late in the day and Sunday, that night, or, you know, early Monday. But again, you know, this is going to be an impactful event.
Yeah. So I saw that you had written back in, I guess it was November, this will be a La Nina, right?
That's right.
La Nina. That's the A. And I remember when I was the weatherman in Washington, A was always like, it's cold. It's wet. Rather than a El Niño, which is the O, which tends to be drier and not as cold for a winter season, because it has to do with the weather, where the water temperature's down around the equator, and how that then affects our weather. So it has turned out to be a true La Niña winter so far, because it was very, very wet right in January, and we expect it to stay. But the temperatures haven't been as cold as you would expect it to be, have they?
That's right. And January was about 2 degrees warmer than normal. December even warmer than that. And we normally see La Nina's effects later in the winter. And by the way, you know what La Nina, you know, means in Spanish? It means the Nina. So anyway, just hope you out there.
John, this is why Nick wasn't intimidated by the fact that you were a former TV weathercaster.
I was a weather. I know they made a big deal about the other weathermen, Nick, and the other markets or the other stations said that I was not a meteorologist and not a weatherman. I was a weather presenter. And they really wanted to make a real distinction as being a weather presenter, to draw a hard, bright line that these other guys had dedicated their entire life to it. And I was just somebody that could, you know, sling it for about 6 minutes on the air. And they were busy, you know, getting all caught up in their chalk dust. And I said, nobody cares about that stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, that and must have really hurt. Yeah,
Nick is as corny as you are, Jay.
Oh, yeah, he's very corny. All right, so the overall, the big question that everybody, I live out here in Central Washington and Cle Elum, people are mad that we're not getting as much snow. Now it's really coming down right now. Is there any way that we can look at it and say, well, if Seattle gets 7, then we get 15? Is there any kind of math that we can do?
I wish I could give you a rule of thumb like that, but we can't. And this is a case, actually, in which And it's kind of unusual, of course, to get snow in the Seattle area, in which the east slopes of the Cascades are getting more than the west slopes. And so places like Cle Elum, Yakima is getting hit and so forth. And so that's somewhat unusual. But the next week is going to be snowy in the Cascades. And overall, for February, expect it pretty active. And, you know, La Nina finally will, you know, have its, it looks like will have its usual effects, giving us a good snowpack by the end of winter.
I just want to pick up really quickly on something you said earlier. Am I to understand that because of, like, climate change, you think that our temperatures are going to get warmer and warmer and snowfall in Seattle is going to happen less and less frequently?
Yes, I do.
Wow. I hadn't heard that.
Our temperatures are rising. There's a little question about that, and it is, the thing is, we're still dominated by the variability in the weather from year to year and even multi-year periods. And so you can have cool periods and warm periods and so forth, and can have things like February 2019 when it was almost 8 degrees cooler than normal. There's that inexorable upward trend in temperatures, and so you're just kind of dealing with more and more of a stacked deck.
So cherish the snow while we have it, John.
It's weather and climate. All right, Nick, we'll give you a chance to give us your best weather joke, because it sounds like you got a bunch of sort of lined up for a rotary speech. So give us the gold, like the one you finish with. That just leaves.
Well, I kind of like just the one about, you know, my mom letting her inside. But you know, I just want to say, I'm giving a forecast here, and I always get the forecast correct. It's not necessarily on the right day, though. So.
Hit it, John.
That's a power out.
Thanks, Nick Bog. Relation DC coming at you on a Thursday. 3:18 in the afternoon. Tracy Taylor's going to stop by traffic a little later on. Get you home with a snowy day. All right. How about Nick Bond throwing a couple of jokes? By the way, when I asked for his best joke, he goes, I already gave you my best joke.
No, I led with my best stuff. He struck out the first batter, not the third, last one.
Right. Coming back around again. All righty. Tim Eyman. Speaking of snow jobs. Let's say we're going to do Tim Eyman or Facebook. We have 3 minutes. We want to hit Tim Eyman real fast. Tim Eyman found liable on campaign finance violations, barred from controlling political committees ever again. He was on with Dory Monson and talked a little bit about what the judge is doing to him. And he says that on Dory's show, I said,
stats out. So yesterday a judge ruled.
Well, they hit it with $7.5 million or something like that.
$2.6 million, which I think is the largest in state history for an individual campaign finance violation.
He's got that. He's got chairs he sells, and he has watches and stuff.
It was a rubber stamp of what the AG wanted. So, $2.6 million worth of fines. You know, why not make it $80 million? I don't have it. I lost everything just getting to court. Lifetime ban on any kind of significant participation in a political action committee, and that I'm declared a PAC, and Tim is a PAC personally, which is the first time in human history a person has been declared a PAC. And so that one's, the last two are really weird.
And finally, what is he going to do next, Tom? Do you know what he's going to do next, Tom?
I'm going to continue to do exactly what I've done over the last 22 years, and that's continue to push ideas that I think resonate with voters. And I think no income tax and no carbon tax are absolutely rock-solid ideas and initiatives to go. I'll sponsor those initiatives. The email update that I'm going to put out today is going to explain this stuff that happened in court today. And I'm going to say, please give to my legal defense fund, because they said I can still continue to raise money for that, timdefense.com. But at the bottom, it's going to say, if you want to help support our initiatives, let's hear from Sid and Larry, and let's find out what they've got to say. And they're going to have, at the bottom, them requesting people donate so that we can do these initiatives, and hopefully I get my loan repaid from the $30 TAPS initiative, where we loaned 500,000 of our own money in order to be able to help get it on the ballot.
See, there's no problem with what Tim wants to advocate politically. He just can't run a campaign because he's been, in effect, like skimming funds off it all these years. I mean, he got caught doing this 15 years ago, and he said, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I just wasn't paying that much attention, paid like a $33,000 fine, and then he got caught again doing something similar. It's not, I mean, there's no reason why he can't stay as influential as he has in the past, because he does have a knack for going after kind of a populist initiatives. He just can't be the one running a campaign. So he can be the figurehead as long as he doesn't touch the money. So
fine, it's Andy.
$2.6 million. I don't know how he's going to pay that. What he's already declared bankruptcy, I think a couple of years ago. So I'm not quite sure what the financial impact on him will be. But anyway, that's sort of where
he has that. He doesn't have that because of the amount of money he had to spend to go to court. But people will kick in money for Tim Iman because Iman is the guy that does all the work to try to get $30 car tabs and make people and make the legislators respond to what the people want. So I saw somebody this morning, a friend of mine, very, very rich, was sending this email around about Tim Iman, and he himself is about to send Tim Iman a bunch of money. So,
yeah. In fact, if Tim Iman just set up a GoFundMe campaign, he'd be legit. It's that he tries to pass himself off as, hey, give money for this cause, and then he takes some of that money for that cause. That's what
But is he getting some of the money because he's doing some of the work?
Well, no, but that's not it. If it's announced, you have to be transparent. There's certain, I don't know what the actual disclosure laws are, but they say he needs to be disclosing the money that he's getting.
Right.
If he does that, he'd be all on the up and up.
Yeah. He has to public disclosure. He has to do it every month. He has to file what his expenditures are, what the revenue is, where it's coming in. And he didn't file those things on a monthly. So then they whacked him on that. And there you go. That's justice is served, I guess. And maybe Tim Iman will just go away and stop making people be responsive to the taxpayers.
Well, no, you got Sid and was it Larry?
Sid and Larry. Are they back together again?
Apparently, in Tim's honor.
Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us. All righty. Yeah. Hanahan. Hey, Nahanabana. Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. That's the number you dial, 1-888-778-KIEL. You want to refinance at home? That number is like sticking a couple of coins in a one-armed bandit and pulling that bad boy down and having that bell ring and that little bucket fill up with change. That's money you put in your pocket. You refinance that house at Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. All righty, let's see. Tom, I assume as a kid you had many animals come and go, all loved, and then they would meet their timely demise with the needle. As my mom used to say, Moose and Sniffy and Mandy and Sniffy and Chain and Teeny. These are all the dogs we had. They all went to live on a farm. And I was like, wow. Is Teeny going to the same farm that Moose went to? And then they went to a farm, and we never saw them again. But they apparently lived happily ever after on that farm.
That did not happen with my childhood. We had late in my childhood, we got a dog, a great dog, Dusty. But no, it's my experience as a father. We had so many animals, in our household raising my two daughters that our farm happened to be in the backyard.
Oh,
so we have many, guinea pigs and gerbils and cats all buried
rocks,
in the backyard.
All under, like rocks. You'd find a good sized rock, right?
You did. And sometimes it's marked. So my kids got very used to going to animal funerals because my wife and the kids would very solemnly go out and, it's it became quite the ritual. But I never thought of taking a pet to a pet cemetery. But apparently that is an active thing.
That is, and for Deborah Horn, who ended up doing a story, apparently there's a pet cemetery, and the people at the, is it in Kent? Yeah, it's in Kent. There they were. I don't know how often you go and visit your animal at the pet cemetery, but you go there, and you just want to be peaceful, and you want to know that your beloved animal is there. And
she was 4 pounds. Then...
Dana Young walked over to where her cherished pet is buried.
at the Seattle Pet Cemetery off Military Road in Kent.
Right here. Daisy.
But instead of clear open sky looming overhead Daisy's final resting place, now stands a 100-foot cell tower.
This tall, this intruding, evasive, and not a good sight in a cemetery where we come to pray for our pets that's gone to heaven.
Neighbors are upset too, still chafing after they say King County officials dismissed their protests, calling this simply a landfill.
That makes no sense. You have to do is walk out here and see a site that's been here for 70 years, and there's humans along with the pets here. So it has a long historical history of it being a cemetery.
As it happens, pet cemeteries are not licensed in the state of Washington, and the law does allow cremated human remains to be here too.
So here we have Diane Velma Gray Bell. She was born in 1934 and passed in 2017.
Julie Seitz is leading the campaign, collecting signatures to undo what she sees as a terrible wrong.
We have been working to oppose, and we have not stopped.
And even though it has been built.
Even though it's been built, because we believe it has been built in bad faith.
They believe state law mandates that this is a cemetery and a cemetery alone.
We know that we have humans and we have pets, we have canine officer, at least one, and we are trying to protect their graves. We are hurt and we're angry too.
Okay. So normally when they do this, there is some public comment or they do let people know that those towers are going in, I assume, and maybe somebody didn't catch it. I wonder if they'd feel better. You can. They sell these towers now that you can disguise them like pine trees. I wonder if they'd be okay with that, Tom.
Well, yeah. I mean, I understand the sensitivity of the people who actually go to the cemetery. I wonder if this pet cemeteries are visited more often than human cemeteries. I don't know, but I can imagine it does kind of impact the visual. That if you did, I was thinking maybe what if they ended up trying to decorate the cell tower with like pictures of all the pets in that cemetery. In other words, make it kind of a memorial. In a lot of cemeteries, there are, big statues honoring the fallen from World War One. Maybe they could try to mask it as you suggest, but make it more kind of like a monument to all the pets and humans that are buried there. You laugh, John. I'm crying on the inside.
I didn't fall off that idea. I'm not going to have that big monument. I mean, maybe you could have some sort of thing like if, let's say they did a sculpture where it would be like a pig on the back of a cow, on the back of a dog, on the back of, and then like, and it just keeps going up and up and up, right? Like all the way up the food, literally up the food chain. And then, some of these.
Oh my God, that's even better. I was just thinking of a picture. So let's say there are 100 animals in that cemetery.
Yes.
I was just thinking taking a picture of them. No, we could actually form, they could pay, $100 mm-hmm. bucks and create a little life-size model. And then we could have one on top of the other. And then they keep, and then they, until it gets to 100 at the top of the cell tower. Cemetery is full, everybody. See, we are solutions oriented.
Solving. And then that would be great. All right. Wasn't a joke, but that's the only sound effect I had for that one. There. Deborah Horn, hopefully you're listening. We just solved that problem for you. That's one minute. By the way, one part of me wants to kind of poke a little fun, but God bless that lady. She goes to a pet cemetery to pray for her animal.
I know. That seems a bit much. But as I realized with friends who don't have kids, pets are often like substitutes for kids. And so they pour whatever human emotion you have, sort of left over or you're not using, you can pour into your animal. And that's why I think some of these pets are revered, because they are the recipient of all that love you have for life.
Nicole Thompson, Dory's producer, is now has a kitten. And when her friends are like, oh, fur baby, she's like, no. I do not have a fur baby. This is a cat. And I am not the fur baby's mom. I am not a cat's mom. This is my pet. I'm like, no, 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 that's a fur baby. Nope. No, I'm drawing the line on that one.
He thinks she does protest too much.
Don't try to Seattleize my relationship with my animal. Just kind of keep that apart. Plus, the other thing is, Hannah Scott is waiting to ask a question of the governor. I assume that the press conference is over. And Hannah has a question directly relating to Nicole
Thompson. Cemetery?
So...
Oh, Nicole.
Well, yes,
okay.
And the pet cemetery. That was her follow-up question. But her main one actually involves Nicole, Dory's producer, and we're hoping Hannah was able to get that question off to the governor.
Okay.
All right.
And just don't let it be known, Dory, by the way. Dory's producer, and he might
no,
answer.
No. It wasn't oh. Dory. It has nothing to do with Dory.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't have to do with Dory. Yeah.
All right.
Let's see. Tracy Taylor's got to look. How is it really slippery and slidey out there?
It's actually really bad.
Alrighty. On a big snow day, big snow weekend coming up. Tom, are you taking off tomorrow for the shovel out, the big snow, getting ready to prepare?
Yeah,
for
tomorrow is my mom's 90th birthday, so we're having a big party. Just with my wife and I, and then we're doing virtual, you know, Zoom calls from all of her, you know, kids and all. So it'll be great.
How's your mom doing the Zoom? Is she up to date on all that stuff?
Well, yeah. In fact, we're doing Zoom one at a time because what we noticed when you have like five or six people on Zoom, it kind of like floods her circuit. So, you know, this is better just doing it one at a time. So, you know, my brother's at various points of the evening tomorrow will be checking in with her one-on-one. That works better.
I would assume you're just normally interrupting one another.
Yeah, that's right. And she just can't keep up with it.
You've explained the way you guys talk.
Exactly. That's why you're like I have four brothers. You're like my fifth brother. So you just get so animated that we're all trying to talk over each other.
By the way, the NFL is trying to get women to get into football by playing flag football. But then I looked this up, Tom. It says Russell Wilson announces flag football league in partnership with the NFL flag, Seattle Seahawks. So flag football is trying to get going just about everywhere. Seattle Seahawks star Russell Wilson has teamed up with the NFL flag to bring the newest official NFL flag league to the Seattle area. And I think this is both male. Yeah, it's male and female for football experience or boys and girls 4 to 14. I think this is primarily because the NFL feels pressure to stop kids from playing contact football where they can get concussions at early ages, and they want to put off hitting until about high school. So this is a chance for them to learn the fundamentals of football through flag football, but not be 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders playing full contact football.
Except I think that it's just girls' flag football.
Yes, that's the other. That's what the story is, that the NFL is trying to get girls' football going.
Yeah. Here's again. So we have a story you pointed out that this Super Bowl was like the lowest Super Bowl in 13 years or something in terms of ratings. That the NFL is slipping, maybe in terms of overall spectator interest, although that's discounted a bit by all the streaming components of that. But they also are concerned that the number of kids playing football, boys mostly playing tackle football, is dropping precipitously because of the concussion concern. So what the NFL is doing is kind of trying to kill two birds with one stone. The first is they're trying to encourage girls in playing flag football, and they're hoping that they're offering, you know, with Nike, they're offering hundreds of thousands of dollars to these various leagues. Apparently there are four states that already have a state high school girls, you know, flag football championship, and they want to get that more and more, because what they realize is once girls start playing flag football, they understand the strategy of tackle football and are more interested in it, and they think that that's a way to help grow the sport to balance out the fact that a lot of parents don't like their kids playing tackle football because of concussion concerns, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah. If they had I just looked online, they have a flag football thing here in Clay Ellum. I would go play that.
Really? Well, you're a little. Maybe you could coach them, John. You're a little rusty.
Tom.
Yes.
It would be by age group.
Oh, well, this is. You're getting far beyond the kind of the NFL hook then.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine, though. Just in general. Hey, listen.
Yeah, let me tell you, if there were like a bunch of 50-year-olds, I'd dominate.
Yeah, you'd. That's right.
Like, what are you laughing at?
Hold on a second. A team of 50-year-olds, the first team that gets a first down would be declared the winner.
Jacob, tell him how fast I am.
How would I know how fast you are?
I'm going to you.
You know, when you chase him.
I will say, you can go to our Facebook or Twitter page right now, and you can see how quickly you get out of the water after you dunk your head in. I mean, you're a little shaky, but you move pretty quick.
I don't get out gracefully, I'll say that. By the way, did you cut the F-bombs out of that
I did,
thing?
Yeah. I cut it off right before those start.
Hey, as the only guy in the program that literally played in organized flag football when I was in junior high at Christ the King, I got to tell you, it's a great way to learn the game. I absolutely love the game, and it's because of the strategy you learn, in flag football. So I highly recommend flag football. I never once got a concussion either.
Yeah, well, you know what? As a guy that played Hard Knocks football, okay?
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, Smash Mouth football.
The proof broke is in the leg, pudding.
Broke his leg. Broke last his leg. Play of the game. Broke my leg. Last play of the game. Last game of the season. Archers of Carroll against O'Hara.
Wow.
Tried out. Still going. I had nothing good going on there. Then when at the age of 40, tried out for Seattle Prep football and made the team.
Yes.
Made the team when I was 40 years old.
Quite randomly, I ran into a guy who was on that high school team, and he did not have great
things to say about you. Let's go to Tracy Taylor. Look at traffic. Tracy's got it. Tracy right now. Tracy, say something. Traffic.